For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty, our two, Scott Horton, should be coming up of antiwar.com, Libertarian Institute. Great, super great resources, and he's got great books as well. You want to get, don't forget, buy some TNT Radio merchandise, t-shirts, mugs, that sort of jazz. Send a donation our way to TNT Radio. Help keep us going. I mean, imagine if there were, if TNT Radio ceases to exist, you're just going to have more CNNs and BBCs and Washington Posts. So, all right. Some slightly good news. Wimbledon reluctantly lifts Russia and Belarus ban. I mean, you know, people have made good points in the past. I mean, it's crazy, this politicization of sports. I mean, the whole point of, you know, sports and Olympics and that sort of stuff is to bring people together. And it's just, it's poisonous when we bring politics into this. Tennis players from Russia and Belarus will once again be permitted to compete at Wimbledon after the All England Club announced it was ending the suspension imposed last year following the onset of the conflict in Ukraine. Players such as Russia's Daniil Medvedev, currently ranked fifth in the world, and Belarus's Arina Sabalenka, ranked second, will once again be eligible to participate in the Grand Slam. I guess only if they're vaxxed, right? No. They said this was an incredibly difficult decision, not taken lightly or without a great deal of consideration for those who will be impacted. So, and somewhere it said that they had to sign, the players had to sign neutrality agreements. I mean, what does that have to do with anything, tennis, like signing a neutrality agreements? Everything is becoming wokeified. It's crazy. And I guess this is big news. Russia adopts new anti-West foreign policy global strategy. Putin signed off on a new Russian foreign policy strategy aimed at curtailing Western dominance and identifying China and India as key partners for the future. The new document cements the deep Cold War style rupture between Russia and the West. The Russian Federation intends to give priority to the elimination of vestiges of the dominance of the U.S. and other unfriendly countries in world politics, the document says. The term unfriendly countries is used by Russia to refer to those countries, particularly in Europe and North America. I wonder if the Russians are going to stop using the term our Western partners. They've been too polite. Our Western partners who are trying to annihilate us. I mean, do you call the person who's trying to dismember you your partner? No, I don't think so. So it's a 42-page document over at the Kremlin's website. And it makes sense from an objective perspective because, look, it's following last week's deadly attacks on U.S. bases in northeast Syria. I mean, according to the UN spokesperson, there are no U.S. bases in northeast Syria, but I guess there are. So it was an exchange from a couple days ago where a Chinese journalist was pressing the UN spokesperson who said, no, there's no American troops in Syria. I don't know what you're talking about. So anyways, the U.S. has announced an extension of the George H.W. Bush carrier strike group's deployment in the Mediterranean region. The extension of the Bush carrier strike group, inclusive of the USS Leyte Gulf, the USS Delbert Black, and USNS Arctic, allows options to potentially bolster the capabilities of CENTCOM to respond to a range of contingencies in the Middle East, such as the Syrian government trying to defend itself to stop the theft of 80% of its petroleum by U.S. soldiers who are not in Syria. They're just ghosts. The oil is just, you know, it's crazy. This, I don't know what to say anymore. It's ridiculous. De-dollarization, as I mentioned before, ASEAN ministers consider dropping U.S. dollar, euro, and yen. And this would mean that an ASEAN cross-border digital payment system would be expanded further and allow ASEAN states to use local currencies for trade. Again, that's just every day we're talking about this, de-dollarization. Recently, I chatted with Heritage and Mises economist Peter St. Onge. Go back and listen to that. He's fantastic. What else is interesting? Saudi king to be invited to visit Iran. So previously we had the Saudi king invite Iran's president Raisi to Riyadh. And now we have the Saudi king being invited to Iran. So BFFs forever. In an interview with Al Jazeera, it's been said that Iran has responded to an invitation by King Salman to visit Riyadh and will offer to reciprocally host the king. So some good news in the Middle East, I guess. Peace in the Middle East. And NATO, again, Libertarian Institute, Kyle Anzalone, he'll be joining me on TNT in the near future as well, writes about NATO war games just miles from Ukraine's border, Sea Shield 23, which are underway, closing this weekend. 11 NATO countries with the U.S. participating in Romanian-led military exercises. So, yeah. And a reminder, if you ever miss a TNT show or interview, you can always listen back to the archives. Everything is there from the very beginning over at tntradio.live or the podcast platforms, Google, Spotify, Amazon, you name it. There's no reason to miss anything on TNT Radio.
Stay updated on everything you need to know.
They keep me up to date.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Are we going to have a problem here? Iran is threatening retaliation on Israel after a deadly airstrike in Syria reportedly took the life of an Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps officer. Meanwhile, the Pentagon has just revealed that six U.S. troops have been diagnosed with traumatic brain injuries following last week's suspected Iranian-backed attacks at U.S. bases, also in Syria. Here with an update, joining me once again is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thanks, Roy. Although, as you rightly pointed out earlier, there are no U.S. troops in Syria. So how the heck did that happen? We'll get to that in a minute. All right. So, yeah, the stage is being set or something is going on in Syria. And of all the news I have to cover about Syria, none of it involves Syrians, which is kind of interesting. So Iran has pledged to retaliate after claiming that an officer in its IRGC was killed on Friday in an Israeli airstrike near the Syrian capital, Damascus. West Jerusalem has not responded to the Iranian allegation, in keeping with its unofficial policy of rarely commenting on strikes in the region. The IRGC said of the apparent Israeli strike in a statement broadcast by Iranian media on Friday the following, quote, "The Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps has announced the martyrdom of Guardsman Milad Haydari, one of the IRGC's military advisors and officers," end quote. Tehran called the attack a quote-unquote criminal action, which it pledged would not go, quote, unanswered, end quote. As Iran's influence in Syria grew, thanks to its support for President Bashar Assad in the civil war, which began in 2011, Israel has frequently struck what it says are Iran-linked targets in the country. Tehran maintains, however, that its officers serve in advisory positions only. It has reportedly lost dozens of IRGC officers throughout the conflict, according to Reuters. Hezbollah, the Lebanese militant group, and various Iraqi paramilitary outfits, all backed by Iran, have fortified positions in and around Damascus, as well as in Syria's north, east, and south. According to local reporting, Israel launched the barrage of missiles shortly after midnight local time early on Friday. Syria claims to have shot down an unknown number of missiles. The foreign ministries of Iran and Syria have both strongly condemned Friday's airstrikes. Oh, good. Look, Syria actually comes into play here. Other than the backdrop, the setting, as it were, where apparently, yes, there are U.S. troops stationed out there. Maybe we wouldn't even have known this if it were not for the fact that some of them got hurt. According to Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Patrick Ryder, speaking to reporters, four U.S. troops at the coalition base near Hasaka that was attacked by a suspected Iranian drone on March 23rd, and two U.S. troops at Mission Support Site Green Village that was attacked on March 24th, have been diagnosed with traumatic brain injury. Ryder said, quote, as standard procedure, all personnel in the vicinity of a blast are screened for traumatic brain injuries, so these additional injuries were identified post-attack during medical screenings, end quote. The latest TBI diagnoses bring the total number of injured U.S. personnel due to the recent attacks in Syria, although they're not in Syria, to 13. But Ryder said that more TBIs could be diagnosed as medical screenings continue. Wow. So Hervory, it's just like now an open, oh, God only knows, I suppose, how many people, how many casualties, as it were, are a result of this terrible action by Iran, obviously. What do you think?
There are no Iranian troops in Syria. There are no American troops in Syria, according to the UN. I mean, for me, this is one of the most flagrant violations regarding what the U.S. is doing in Syria. I mean, we should just get out of there. There are a number now of American U.S. senators and politicians calling for the U.S. to get out of Dodge. I think Rand Paul, I'm sure Thomas Massey and others. It's absurd. I mean, we're in Ukraine officially. We're unofficially in Syria. You've got all these other special ops, black ops in Africa, you know, Somalia, and you know, Yemen behind the scenes helping that war out. We should just get out of Dodge. Yeah, that's enough. But I'm sometimes reminded of that prophecy in the Bible that talks about Damascus becoming one heap of, you know, just being completely leveled. And I'm wondering if, you know, if that's gonna happen some day, because it's just this it's just ongoing, never ending, problems in Syria, and it seems to be escalating. Because if you got Iran there, US, Russia, Israel, it's a party. It's a big party. And, you know, Turkey just approved Finland's accession to NATO, and so Turkey just flip-flops on everything. So yeah, it's not looking good in Syria. Although we have the embassies reopening in Saudi Arabia, Syrian embassy. So there does seem to be, when it comes to the GCC area, them making amends. But I don't know, if I were Assad, how much I would trust some of my neighbors. So yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. This is weird, because it's like, it's funny, because we'll hear all day long in the news about Russia, 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 China, 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 China. But then like we've got stuff like there's this whole complicated, bizarre, like you, as you refer to it, a party, hashtag let's get this party started, right? Going on here in the Middle East. It's always been a cauldron, I don't know what's the term I'm looking for. It's like it's always gonna pop off at any moment. But it seems like we don't always talk about it. But you could probably look at what's going on there every day, and you'd be like, holy moly, this is probably newsworthy. But over here, we're like talking about spy balloons from China, or banning TikTok because China, or Trump doing something because Russia. You know what I mean? Like, there's probably some other concerns happening all around the world. And, you know, we've got the Taiwan thing. We've got this death of the dollar happening as far as the use of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency, because nations are now deciding to say, you know what, Mr. Greenback, we don't need you anymore, but thanks. So, yeah, but they always want to scream about China and Russia. Which is the bigger threat? Is it ultimately going to be Iran? What do you think?
Or just everything, you know, it's going to be Russia, China, and Iran, a big, bad World War III. And as I was mentioning before the break, before you joined, U.S. extending carrier deployment to provide military options in Syria. I wonder what those options will be, because, you know, Russia's got Syria's back. And so we've got all these different flashpoints where a miscalculation could lead to escalation, could lead to World War III, whether it's in the Syrian war theater that's not officially going on, doesn't exist, or Ukraine or South China Sea, even the Mexican border, heck. So, yeah, it's really, I don't know what to say. It's just we keep going, crossing Rubicon after Rubicon, while our dollar is just, everyone's leaving the dollar party. So, all right, Ruckus, have a fantastic weekend. I'm afraid with the news you're going to bring us next week on Monday. So yeah, give us some happy news. Try to give us some happy news next week. Scott Horton will be joining me. Feel free to call in and chat with us right after this break.
You should hear what Alan Miller is talking about.
It seems to me that many people think you can't really ever assess or evaluate anything scientifically, because on the one hand, there's things that are lied about, and on the other hand, is it even possible to have an objective account of what's happened? I mean, how do you see that, first of all?
Well, I mean, you know, in a sense, yeah, that's what we have done instead, is rather than form a judgment about scientific fact, form a judgment about how, if you like, a discourse of science was developed, and the political framework of that, and the dimension of power and politics and of economic interests which have shaped the way in which what we call the COVID consensus emerged. So those are quite different things. But we do also say, you know, on the more kind of hotter topics like masking, vaccines, those kind of things, our interest is really around the way in which the economic and political frameworks produce the outcome that we saw, and how that is completely contrary to the scientific method.
Alan Miller and today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
We don't talk at you.
Blah, 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 blah.
Shut up! We talk with you.
What do you think of this idea?
Let me tell you this.
What's wrong with this picture?
From government overreach to the global pandemic, TNT Radio invites you to join us as we separate facts from fiction, truth from propaganda, day in, day out.
Call the open line anytime.
From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech has a home on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Joining us is Scott Horton, director of the Libertarian Institute at libertarianinstitute.org. He's editorial director of antiwar.com, host of Anti-War Radio in LA, and host of the Scott Horton Show podcast from scotthorton.org. He's done more than 5,600 interviews, and he's got fantastic books such as Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. I don't know if he ever sleeps. You can find him on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Welcome back to TNT, Scott.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
How are things going? And, you know, I think a while back you guys had a fundraiser. Are you guys doing good?
Oh, over at the Institute? Yeah, we're trudging along. Overhead's low. Basically, 100% of y'all's donations go straight to paying my guys. And we got a great group of guys over there. It's, of course, the legendary Sheldon Richmond and Jim Bovard and Lori Calhoun. And then our youngsters are Kyle Anzalone, Keith Knight, Connor Freeman, Patrick McFarlane, and I guess he's not so young, Tommy Salmons is my age. But those are our great podcasters and writers, and we sort of share them with antiwar.com as well. It's a kind of intermixed crew there, a sister organization, so to speak. And yeah, it's really great. And we got a bunch of great books coming out this year and lots of stuff in the works. So that's all libertarianinstitute.org.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of your work. Kyle's coming on again on the show in the near future. I've had Connor on and Patrick and Dave DeCamp, and great work. And Libertarian Institute's one of my go-tos when it comes to the war stuff, foreign policy, as well as anti-war. And maybe starting at home in the U.S. to get your thoughts on the state of clown world USA. We had Biden. He was in Rolling Fork, and he thought he was in Rolling Stone. We've got the Trump indictment. You know, what are your thoughts when it comes to the home front?
Well, I didn't see Biden's gaffe, but I think, yeah, we all know that he's completely losing his mind. And, you know, he's always been absolutely horrible. I mean, back when he was sharp, he was just, you know, the equivalent of John McCain evil in the U.S. Senate his entire career. Did you know that the very first thing that Joe Biden did when he joined the U.S. Senate in 1973 was he denounced Richard Nixon for his hasty and precipitous withdrawal from Vietnam?
That's interesting.
That was Biden's first thing he did when he joined the U.S. Senate. That's who he's always been. Absolute monster. And so, I mean, I think it's a real worry. You know, in a way, I wonder if maybe he has enough self-doubt to keep him from doing anything too drastic. Like, he knows he's slipping, and maybe he's like, I'm grasping at straws here, you know, trying to like console myself that the situation that we're in with this, the current version of Joe Biden as dear leader, it's not a hopeful situation to be in. I'm not sure if anybody really knows who's in charge. I mean, obviously, he's still the tiebreaker. If they all disagree, he still ultimately is the president. But is it that, you know, Jake Sullivan, or who's his chief of staff? Like, who's running the White House, like really running it? And, you know, I don't know. It's possible that they all agree on everything enough that there's, you know, a pretty good consensus on how to go forward or whatever. I don't know, really. But it's a pretty dangerous situation when we have to wonder, you know, who has the power, because the national security advisor is not really dedicated that much power in the law. You know what I mean? Like, if it's somebody, a character like Henry Kissinger or something, you could throw a lot of weight around, but you know, I don't know.
Maybe it's the AI.
As far as Trump's indictment, I mean, it looks to me like just one local politician grandstanding. If there's a Democrat Party conspiracy behind it, I guess I wouldn't doubt that, knowing how they operate. If they think that it's in their interest, you know, if somebody pulled him aside and said, listen, it's time for operation, indict him over this bull. But I think it's almost certain to backfire on them. And, you know, especially because it's such a sort of a weak attempt, right? Where they're trying to, I don't know all the details, but it's basically the Federal Election Commission decided they didn't have a case on something that's in their jurisdiction. And then you have this local DA trying to make a felony out of something that would be a misdemeanor that the feds decided to not even prosecute. I think his lawyer said that Trump never paid him back for paying off the lady anyway, because he never does pay anybody what he owes him. So, I mean, the whole thing just seems almost certain to backfire. And they should have learned last time with the Pied Piper strategy that cheaters never win, man. You know, and trying to get unfair advantage like this is just going to. And look, I mean, I learned this when I was a kid, didn't you? That Nixon got impeached and would have been removed, had to resign because he lied about this burglary, but not for the secret war in Cambodia. That is, yeah, it was illegal and he wasn't supposed to do that. And he didn't have any authority to do that. And he killed probably a million Cambodians or so. But listen, presidents can do whatever they want. And there's no law that can touch their power. But then it comes to something like, you know, off the clock paying hush money to some burglars and this and that. Ah, we got you. And same thing with Bill Clinton. I mean, that guy murdered the Branch Davidians within, what, his first 8 weeks of being in office or 10 weeks of being in office. Goes on to cover up the Oklahoma City bombing. You know, covers up and like actively works to cover up the Gulf War illness and, you know, launches the Israeli-inspired dual containment policy in Iraq, which, you know, was starving people to death and depriving people to death by the hundreds of thousands and bringing on Al-Qaeda's war against the United States, even while he was still back in Al-Qaeda in Bosnia, Kosovo, and Chechnya. And nobody cared about any of that. He didn't get impeached for that. In fact, there's a great clip. Have you ever seen it? Where Ron Paul is on C-SPAN and they ask him about the impeachment. And he goes, oh, I'm voting to impeach him, all right, on all four counts. But I wish we were impeaching for what he's doing right now, bombing Iraq without authorization, to without a declaration of war. And it was, you might remember, maybe you might be too young, that the day that the House was to begin the full House out of committee was to begin debating the articles of impeachment, he started Operation Desert Fox in December 98, carpet bombing Iraq. And Ron Paul was like, that's what I want to impeach him for. It was great. Good old Ron Paul, man. That's in those days. He's just awesome.
I'm going to have to check that clip. And, you know, my biggest fear with all this stuff is the unforeseen consequences. So as you say, yeah, it's a bit of a circus, but just given how tense things are back home, I worry, you know, we could see violence and just one thing lead to another. And I've been having, you mentioned Oklahoma City, I've had on twice, Ken Silva, who's been digging into some of that stuff. We're going to have to jump to our break. We'll be right back.
Here's a little news flash.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. A statement posted to Manhattan District Attorney Bragg's Twitter account essentially affirmed the New York Times report, which revealed that the New York grand jury voted to indict former President Trump as part of the case involving alleged hush money paid to a porn star. The French people's confidence in the leadership of President Emmanuel Macron has fallen to the lowest level since the Yellow Vest protests in 2018, as Marine Le Pen's populists and far leftists rise.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with Scott Horton. Feel free to give us a call and do check out his books. I've got them. Really good stuff. Antiwar.com. I've supported them as well. Libertarianinstitute.org. Roger Waters is definitely a fan of anti-war. And Scott, before getting to some of the military stuff, there's so much going on. Syria, Yemen, Ukraine, China. But the financial aspect, de-dollarization, it's happening so quickly now. ASEAN talking about dropping the dollar, Iraq in some instances, Saudi Arabia, Brazil. It sounds like it's happening. What are your thoughts as to the de-dollarization and then what impact that could have on the empire and the military might of the empire?
All right. Well, first, I'll plead a little bit innocent that I've been working really hard on this history book about how America started this Cold War with Russia. So I've spent the time that I should have been spending looking at the articles you're referring to here, instead writing about Bill Clinton backing the terrorists in Bosnia in 1995, because I'm a little bent that way. But so I'm a little bit behind the times on, you know, the latest to this. Although, you know, on the other hand, I asked Mike Swanson, who's, you know, a successful hedge fund manager and investment advisor and friend of mine who I interviewed on my show today about it. And he said that he thinks that, you know, the diversification away from the British pound, it took a while, and he expects for this to take a while. You know, part of the problem from our opponent's point of view, say, you know, the Chinese and the Russians and others who would prefer to not see America get this advantage, is that their currencies all suck too, and their central banks only know how to print money all day too. And almost all of the major powers in the world, including the EU, I think, are worse than the Americans in terms of the overall stability of their currencies. And so if you're a foreign central banker in, you know, say like a lower mid-ranked country, and you have these vaults, you know, full of some gold, but, you know, your reserves basically are $100 bills. And does it really make sense to just swap those reserves out, or, you know, $100 and U.S. securities, you know, treasuries and stuff? But does it make sense to swap all of that out for Chinese currency instead? You remember 10 years ago, they talked about, well, we're going to switch out. We're going to come up with this market basket of currencies, and we're going to make this collection of global currencies compete with the dollar. But it just didn't work. And so, you know, as libertarians, maybe we're alone with the inside understanding how virtually any government intervention in the economy is causing, you know, causes a distortion that there's going to be consequences. I mean, you might think it's worth it even, but you got to understand how it's going to distort the way prices did have things before and that kind of deal. But I think, you know, in America, I mean, hell, our own Republicans and Democrats don't seem to understand that. And I think around the world, it's even worse that they have very political economies. And, you know, like China, for example, they have a higher debt to GDP ratio than we do. And they, you know, have this endless money printing machine. And whenever there's a recession, they just print more money, keep it going, kick the can down the road. So, you know, and they have these giant projects, these government projects that cost billions of dollars that are just for nothing, just wasted. You know, these ghost cities, they build entire sections of town of, you know, I'm sure you've seen the footage of all these high rises being demolished because they built so many for these planned communities that never came into being. And these are very political decisions. And we have our boom and bust cycles here, but those are very political decisions here too, you know, as far as commercial real estate and who's getting financed for major projects like that and all that. So, you know, I guess I got good advice on this a long time ago now. I haven't caught up with him recently, but Robert Higgs told me a long time ago that, you know, the world's hooked on dollars and that, you know, the idea that, well, if Saudi diversifies out of dollars for their oil sales, that that's really going to hurt. It's like, meh, I don't know. The whole world has kind of got themselves in this bind where they're all dependent on the American dollar system. And they don't really have any good alternatives to switch to as much as they might resent us. And which, you know, his point being was that, so don't console yourself that the empire is going to fall apart because these people have a lot of bubblegum and strings to rig this thing with for, you know, probably our indefinite future still.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. And a lot of the smart people that I follow are saying the same thing. And this will take a while. I guess the most imminent fear is the inflation that comes back to the U.S. It's just that things will steadily get more expensive. And the living standards will begin to erode back home. I guess that's the most imminent danger. And I didn't know you were working on a new book, so I'm looking forward to that. You said you're digging into the history of Russia. I think Putin today just released a new anti-Western strategy. So I'm wondering if Russian diplomats will stop referring to their Western partners as Western partners if they're now, because, you know, the West is trying to annihilate them. So you want to tell us about the book you're digging into, and then you know, your thoughts on Ukraine, Russia, and so forth.
Sure. Well, I mean, on that last point, it's such a huge mistake for America to kick Russia right the hell out of Europe. Nope, you're an Asian society. Stay the hell out of ours. Well, so then what does that mean? We push him right into the arms of China, heal that old Sino-Soviet split that Nixon worked so hard to exploit back then. Not that they're the Soviets anymore, but, you know, that Russian-Chinese split that Nixon had worked so hard to exploit, and pushing them back together again in contravention of, you know, the entire Cold War policy for the last, you know, 20 years of it anyway. And, you know, and look, I'm no imperialist. I don't care about any of this stuff, but I'm just saying on the empire's own terms, what would have made sense for them to do if they really hate Russia and fear Russia's power in Eastern Europe so much would be to cozy up to China to keep them away from Russia while we stick it to the Russians in Europe. Or if instead we're much more concerned about China's role in the Pacific and their buildup and their potential economic power in the future and the threat to Taiwan and so forth, well, then we should be cozying up to Russia to keep them on our side and away from China. And I believe Donald Trump when he said that, look, that's all he's doing is just having this strategy. He's been to Russia. It doesn't mean he, you know, was their agent or even cared about Russia at all. He's an American patriot. For what it's worth, you know what I mean? But his idea was China, they're the threat. So we should be friends with, after all, the Russians kind of look like us and everything. Let's, you know, do like that. And then he said, and this is the part I was saying, I believe, he said he talked to Henry Kissinger. And he said to Henry Kissinger, don't you agree with me that we should be cozy enough to Putin so that we could split Russia and use them against China? Or at least, you know, keep them out of an alliance with China while we're sticking it to the Chinese. And Kissinger agreed with him, according to Trump, and said, yes, you're the tallest, wealthiest, most brilliant genius who ever lived, Donald Trump, for coming up with that, Kissinger said. That's a direct quote. And so that's all he meant to do. But the problem is the war party in America, it is kind of divided. People say there's a uniparty. Well, I don't know. I think the Democrats hate Russia more and the Republicans hate China more. I think there's really something to that. Although it's also true that the Democrats are worse even than the Republicans on China, if you want to measure it that way. You know, Biden has been much more of a hawk on China than even Trump was. And Trump was, you know, doubling down on Obama and Hillary Clinton's pivot to Asia. It was, you know, Hillary's article in Foreign Policy in 2012 that kicked all that off, America's Pacific Century. And, you know, that was their policy. So I guess the Democrats are worse than both, but the Republicans are trying very hard to be worse than the Democrats on China. And I'm sorry, I forgot the question. But as far as, and then the situation in the war, I mean, it's hell on earth, man. I don't know if people are so partisan about this stuff. I mean, I feel just absolutely terrible for the conscripts on both sides of this thing and the people of Eastern Ukraine, who's, you know, all of the Donbass and all of the area that they've been fighting over for this war for the last year. I mean, you've seen the footage of these towns. All of them, you can tell by looking at them, look like the poorest part of the poorest town in Mississippi in the first place. Right. And then the artillery is just exploding everywhere, blowing these towns off the face of the earth. You see the drone footage of these towns and you can tell, like, well, Caterpillar's going to have a great contract because they're going to have to bulldoze this entire city and start over. There's not one building of any, there's not a wall standing that's worth keeping. You're going to have to start the whole thing over. Yeah. It's a catastrophe. There's hundreds of thousands of people killed. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just to say that I recall a couple of weeks ago their mention of white phosphorus being used and now depleted uranium, which is insane. I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, I saw some footage of what looked like white phosphorus coming from the sky, and some people on Twitter were saying, yeah, it was that, or magnesium or something, but I don't know for sure what footage it was or who supposedly was behind it. As far as the depleted uranium, we know that that's the Brits announced that they're doing it. And the Russians said, we're treating that like a dirty bomb attack. And the Brits' answer is, well, whatever. We can do whatever we want. And then supposedly there are depleted uranium shells now being used by the by Ukrainian forces against the Russians in theater. I don't know if that's exactly true, but it's been reported in the last few days that that's true. And, you know, it's interesting about depleted uranium. If people aren't familiar, you know, you make your bomb out of 235. That's the sweet stuff, right? So you separate all that out, and what's left is this 238, although there's usually some impurities in there too. You have this depleted uranium, this 238, that they pretend is just completely inert and might as well be iron or something, which is not true. It is still somewhat radioactive, and especially because of the different, you know, pollutants that are still in it, because they never get it all the way pure. And then, but the reason it makes such a great shell, or not even shell, but, you know, artillery piece, is because it's self-sharpening. The molecular structure of it is such that instead of getting dull when it hits, like even tungsten is, I guess, the next hardest metal that they have. But when this, when tungsten hits, it gets flat. When this hits, the outer layers peel off in a way that makes the rod gets sharper and sharper and sharper as it penetrates the armor. So it makes for a great anti-armor round. You just have to not care about all the depleted uranium dust that you're leaving around everywhere else, you know, and the pollutants. But this is what Clinton did to Serbia and what W. Bush did to Iraq. And I don't know if Obama and Trump used these in Syria and Yemen, or if, you know, Trump also helped fight Iraq War III in Iraq and Syria, and definitely bomb Yemen. I don't know if they used depleted uranium there, but yeah, it's an an outrage. And it's the kind of thing that's, again, back to my most important point there that I should have focused on, was the Russians said, hey, we take this really seriously, like you're doing a dirty bomb attack against us, which is what, like a third of a nuclear bomb attack? What would we do if they were using depleted uranium shells against our troops? I mean, that's the thing about this, right? Is just imagine for a moment if the Russians had been blatantly pouring billions of dollars of weapons in to back the Sunni insurgency against the Americans in Iraq War II. And laughing about sending our guys home in body bags and stuff like that. Now, in the real history of Iraq War II, it was our allies, the Saudis, who were backing the Sunni insurgency against our guys. But imagine the Russians were saying, yep, we're sending our depleted uranium shells. We openly have Boeing Insky over there in Russia lobbying to send more bombs to Iraq for use against Americans so they can make more money off it. And blatantly so, every day in the Russian press, killing our guys. I mean, George Bush and Dick Cheney, they would have nuked Moscow over that. And they probably would have had support of about 80% of the American people to do so, too. I mean, it's absolutely unthinkable, right? When I say it like that, it just sounds completely absurd. First of all, why would they do that? But secondly, I think the Russians would have the courage to try something like that on that level of what we're doing to the Russians in Ukraine right now? No way, because they know that we're loco. You know, yeah. Our guys pretend like they're angels, and they say that Putin is the most dangerous psychopath on the planet, but they don't behave like it. They behave like they know he has somehow unlimited patience for their antics. But they know that he knows he would never take on America that way, because our guy, Joe Biden or Donald Trump or Barack Obama, George Bush, they would absolutely go to war if the Russians were intervening against us on that scale. In fact, even during Vietnam, I don't think they helped Ho Chi Minh that much. You know what I mean? They certainly didn't beat their chest and laugh about it all the time the way the Americans do.
Yeah, I recall back in 2009 when I was in Geneva, I did a paper on depleted uranium under my professor Alfred Desias, UN special reporter, and I interviewed Doug Rocky, one of the experts on that, and it's horrible, horrible stuff. And now we see Belarus hosting Russian tactical nukes. So things just keep escalating, and we're going to have to jump to our break again. If anyone wants to call in toll free, feel free, and then check out antiwar.com, libertarianinstitute.org, and scotthorton.org, and check out some of Scott's books. We'll be right back.
Deweaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
The last 9 years have been the hottest on record. That's simply an indisputable fact, underscoring the need for bold action to protect our planet, said Administrator Bill Nelson, who is running NASA. Now, let me pick that apart a little bit. The last 9 years have had the highest temperatures that we've ever recorded. It has not been hot on planet Earth. Let me ask you a question. If the ocean temperature is 58 and it rises to 59, do you think that that water is hot? And that's what they do. They use the term hot. The lion's share of the warming has occurred in the coldest, driest areas where it is still frigid. But they love to use that terminology. NASA's climate strategy is a declaration of our continued commitment to lead on climate and how we intend to do so. Well, the first thing you do is advise your president to try to clamp down on China and their two coal plants a week, if you really believe that CO2 is the culprit. Yeah, I can't get off that whole situation with that graphic showing that the United States is leading the way in stopping carbon emissions, whether you want to believe that CO2 is responsible or not. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Hi, Gemma Simon here from the Newcastle Jets for RAD. Playing any sport means setting the right example. And it's not just about how players focus and behave when they're on the field. It's also about their actions and behaviours off it. That includes things like drink driving, drug driving, and driver distractions. No one can perform properly if they're under the influence or distracted. So make sure you make the right decisions when it comes to getting behind the wheel of a car, and you'll definitely earn respect for it.
A message from RAD.
If you're talking about it,
over 6,000 migrants per day on average were apprehended after illegally crossing the border.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
It's our final segment with Scott Horton, author of Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism. I did a podcast on geopolitics and empire with him on that book a year or two ago. And do support antiwar.com. I'm a big fan of the work there, libertarianinstitute.org. Call in if you like. And any other thoughts that are pertinent on your mind, Scott, or related to what we were discussing, I think has to do with the whole Russia situation as well. NATO expansion. Erdogan just approved Finland's accession to NATO. Meanwhile, we've got them trying to create the Asian NATO. AUKUS and Quad. Lavrov came out and discussed that and how they want to use that as a battering ram now against India and China. So your further thoughts.
Yeah, well, you had asked about the book that I'm writing, which is, it started out as a speech about how America started the Cold War that I gave in 2020. And then the new Cold War, the second one. And then when the war broke out, I kind of updated it and it became a 2-hour speech. And then, but it was still supposedly the focus was on the run up to the Ukraine war and why it was really America's fault, that all that. But then now it's really the history of the entire new Cold War, which really begins with the end of the last Cold War. And so it's gotten completely out of control. It's 620 something pages already, 625 pages. And I still have a lot more work to do. And then I'm going to try, obviously, to cut it way down too, if I can figure out how to cut it down. But it's really the story of how H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton and W. Bush and Barack Obama and Donald Trump and Joe Biden, with the help of Joe Biden and John McCain and people like that all along, how they got us into this mess, how they ruined everything, and how they took advantage of the Russians' good faith, the Russians who overthrew the communists for us and took advantage of their good faith and lied to them and broke their promises and expanded their military alliance right up into not just their so-called backyard, but their front porch, the Baltic states, separating them from their land in Kaliningrad, their important naval port on the Baltic Sea there, and threatening, starting with W. Bush, to bring Ukraine and Georgia both into NATO as well, which is obviously a direct military threat to the Russians. And their attitude is, and by the way, and putting in anti-missile missiles in Poland and Romania that are launched from dual-use launchers that can hold Tomahawk cruise missiles that can be tipped with hydrogen bombs, and overthrowing in the color-coded revolutions any elected government in the region that gets along with Russia. And when they vote for the wrong guy, we just do a coup and overthrow them in the name of democracy. And over again with, 8 or 10 examples from the last 20 years of them getting away with this kind of thing, or going back to 2000. So, we essentially put their back in against the wall. Now, I'm not justifying the attack on Ukraine, because I think in my metaphor, they didn't really put Putin in a corner. They did put him with his back to the wall. So could they have, if this is a bar fight, could they expect for him to swing? Yeah. Like, did they really give him absolutely no choice? Like, if the metaphor is really backing him into a corner? I don't think so. I think he had alternatives than to act the way that he acted. But at the same time, yeah, it was the Americans who were shoving him and insulting him the whole time and essentially trying to cause the fight to break out, which they succeeded in doing. And just like our guys came up with this phrase in Vietnam, the self-licking ice cream cone, that was GIs, enlisted guys that came up with that, where everything that they do causes a worse problem, which just gives them more stuff to do. And they fail uphill, basically. You could apply it to all government programs, really, but especially in war. And so if the coup d'etat in 2014, if we're supposed to get away with that clean and it's going to be great, everything's going to work out, and then that blows up in their face, well, fine. No problem. Putin reacted and took Crimea and started backing separatists in the East or independence-minded people in the East. Then that's fine. We'll just issue a whole new NATO doctrine based on rising Russian revanchism and how it's the return of the empire. And now we have to defend ourselves from the terrible thing. And they don't mind at all. You hear them all the time when they talk about the crisis in Russia. If the war didn't start 1 year ago, then it started in 2014. And then you go, and then they go, when Russia seized Crimea, which, as anyone who actually knows the history of that time knows, was the immediate reaction to America overthrowing the government in the capital city there for the second time in 10 years, and the new government immediately that came to power threatening to kick the Russians out of their naval base. So that kind of changes the whole scenario. Again, it doesn't necessarily make it right for the Russians to unilaterally change the sovereignty of Crimea. But then again, it was the Soviets who unilaterally changed the sovereignty of Crimea before. So why is their word holy writ the other direction? You know, the general secretary of the Communist Party made a decree. I'm not so impressed by that, frankly. You know, I don't know. But anyway, they make matters worse. They act in the exact same imperial hubris that animated their invasion of Iraq 20 years ago. They think that they can do whatever they want. You know, it was Bill Clinton's policy in the Middle East that led to September 11th and then 20 years of war in the Middle East in reaction to that. Well, it was Bill Clinton's policy in Eastern Europe, expanding NATO into Russia's former sphere of influence that led to this. It's no different. And in fact, explaining Putin's behavior is a lot like explaining Osama bin Laden's. It's not a justification whatsoever. It's just to say that these are the sorrows of empire. This is what happens. The Americans, the Washington, D.C. foreign policy establishment and national security state forever fantasize that they are Superman, the virgin Boy Scout, saving the kitten from the tree, always using his strength to defend the weak from the bully, when they're the bully. They are Lex Luthor, but they can never admit it. Chairman Xi is Lex Luthor. David Koresh is Lex Luthor. You know, Saddam Hussein, Vladimir Putin makes a great one. You know, last night I actually got to pal around with Julian Assange's father and brother. Here's a guy who published government documents that proved that they were liars and criminals and murderers. That's all he did. He didn't commit any crime against any person, but they made him into a Lex Luthor character, an enemy of the American people for our TV screen. I guess he went white-haired young is kind of a weird thing. So that fits. There's your movie character. He's got this, you know, Tony Hawk McSqueeb haircut, only it went white in his 30s. And so therefore he's the enemy of America because what? Because our government says so. I mean, that to me would be the number one indication that he's our friend, right? Obviously this guy is trying to do right by us or our government wouldn't hate him so much. That's my prejudice anyway. But look what they did. He's just one man with a website and they turn him into an enemy. The same way they did David Koresh. And people should never forget 30 years ago. They took this little plot of land. I mean, I've been there. What is it? 3 acres or something? And they made that a foreign nation. And they made the patriarch of that community into a foreign dictator. And his right-hand man and best friend, Steve Schneider, became his lieutenant. And the pantry became the bunker. And they murdered them all. They sent in the Delta Force and they machine gunned them all to death and burned them to death quite deliberately. You might remember they called it a suicide. You might remember your mom and dad believed it, that it was a suicide. When in fact, they sent the army and we have the FBI's own infrared footage proves it. You can see the men get out of the tanks and machine gun the people as their house burns to the ground. Okay. 80 people in there, 86 people in there or something. They don't really know because some of them were burned so bad you can't really tell the exact numbers. But listen, you know, that's who they are. That's what they'll do. And I'm from here. I'm a Texan, which makes me even more patriotic and more American than anybody or whatever. I'm Hank freaking Hill over here. But it's still true. It's still true that Bill Clinton is a rapist and a murderer and a liar and a butcher and the lowest degenerate scum on the planet. And that the only difference between him and George W. Bush is George W. Bush doesn't cheat on his wife. Right. Same with Barack Obama.
You should be careful. Don't make any memes about the Clintons. You might end up in jail like that guy who made that Hillary Clinton meme. We're 2 minutes to midnight. Scott, I did want to just mention, you mentioned the color revolutions, and I think is important because it seems like they're trying it again in Georgia, color revolutions. There's talk in Bosnia as well. Some say Israel, what's going on could be a color revolution against.
I think they own the president in Georgia. She's loyal, but the party that supported her rise to power got a little bit out of line there and was trying to limit American influence. And American influence kicked them right in the teeth and they backed down again. So it was like a half of one, right? A half a color code of revolution there in Georgia. And they show you exactly how it works, right? These NGOs snap their fingers, bam, streets flooded. And look, it's just money. And it's a very poor country. And by the way, it's a very divided country, too. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who would like to lean as far west as they can, but geography prevents that. And, you know, by the way, when we talk about that, we really need to specify that we're talking about former Soviet Georgia between the Black and Caspian Sea, not our Georgia that we care so much about, but the one Americans can't even find, that our government cares about, not us.
Real quick, we got about 40 seconds left. Where's the best place to find you, support your work, and if you want to let us know when we can expect a new book to come out?
Okay, well, the show is at scotthorton.org. The Institute is libertarianinstitute.org. Antiwar.com is really the most important project on the internet. You should read it every single day. And the book, man, I don't know, months from now, I'm working on it. It'll be called Provoked: How America Started a New Cold War with Russia and the Catastrophe in Ukraine.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us on TNT. Scott, have a great weekend. Steve Malzberg's show is coming up. Stay tuned. Keep on rocking in the not-so-free world.